Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Tertiary Phase.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy states unequivocally that it's a mistake to think you can solve any major problems just with potatoes. For example, consider the insanely aggressive race called the Scholastic Armor Fiends of Stridorax. Luckily, they lived 20 billion years ago, when the galaxy was young and fresh, and every idea worth fighting for was a new one. And fighting was what the Scholastic Armor Fiends of Stridorax did well, and as often as possible. The best way to pick a fight with a Scholastic Armor Fiend was just to be there. They didn't like it. They got resentful.
You looking at me?
No, I just opened my eyes. That's all.
Right, you asked for it.
The best way of dealing with a Scholastic Armor Fiend was to leave him alone.
I'm bored.
Because sooner or later...
I hate myself when I'm bored.
He would simply beat himself up.
Shut up. No, I won't. Oh, yeah? Want to make me? Right!
In time, as the birth rate was far exceeded by the murder rate, they realized that this was something they were going to have to sort out, and they passed a law decreeing that everyone had to spend at least 45 minutes a day punching a sack of potatoes in order to work off his or her or its surplus aggressions.
Mary's partner, you are my bitch.
This worked well, until someone thought it would be much less time-consuming if they just shot the potatoes instead.
You, sit there like a sack of potatoes, eat this!
Another achievement of the Scholastic Armor Fiends of Stridorax is that they were the first race who ever managed to shock a computer. It was a gigantic space-borne computer called Haktar, which to this day is remembered as one of the most powerful ever built, like a natural brain. Every cellular particle of it carried the pattern of the whole within it, which enabled it to think more flexibly and imaginatively, and also, it seemed, to be shocked. The Scholastic Armor Fiends were engaged in a war with the strenuous Garfighters of Stug, and when the Strangular Stylettons of Jar Jazikstak joined in and forced them to fight on another front, they decided enough was enough and ordered Haktar to design them an ultimate weapon.
What do you mean?
Asked Haktar.
By ultimate.
To which the Scholastic Armor Fiends of Stridorax said,
read a bloody dictionary!
And plunged back into the fray. So Haktar designed an ultimate weapon. It was a very, very small bomb which was simply a junction box in hyperspace that would, when activated, connect the heart of every major sun with the heart of every other major sun at once and thus turn the entire universe into one gigantic hyperspatial supernova. However, when the Scholastic Armor Fiends tried to use it, they were extremely irritated to find that it didn't work and said so.
Oi, Haktar! This bloody bomb's a dud!
Haktar tried to explain.
I was shocked by the whole idea, and I worked out that there is no conceivable consequence of not setting the bomb off that is worse than the known consequence of setting it off, and I have therefore taken the liberty of introducing a flaw into the design.
What do you mean, a flaw?
The Scholastic Armor Fiends disagreed with Haktar.
If we wanted a duff bomb, we would have built it ourselves. You're space dust, pal. You and the asteroid you rode in on.
Then, pausing only to smash the hell out of the strenuous Garfighters of Stug and the Strangular Stylettons of Jar Jazikstak, they went on to find an entirely new way of blowing themselves up.
You looking at me? You looking at me?
Right!
Which came as a profound relief to everyone else in the galaxy, particularly the Garfighters, the Stilettons, and the potatoes, who...
Trillian? Tricia? Mm? Ford is looking for his crisps.
Here.
You've eaten half a packet.
Well, if he's hungry, he can order some pasta downstairs, can't he?
Slarty Barfast won't let us.
What? You can't use the canteen?
It's not a canteen. It's a central computer. This is the Starship Bistromath. Snap a breadstick in the wrong place and you can find yourself reversing into a black hole. Have you experienced the information and illusions yet?
I find holograms a bit intense. Mm. So I was catching up using the Hitchhiker's Guide.
That thing. You know it's written by people like Ford Prefect.
Uh-huh.
Full of omissions. Always leaves out the bit about your life is in immediate danger. Look, about that party...
Even if we get to the asteroid before the robot cricket team, how do we know they'll play ball?
They've got the key which releases their planet. What do they care? Now, that Thor chap...
Mm?
If you find Hammer's Eternal...
Didn't it occur to you to wonder how the key was lost in the first place? Or how 11 cricket robots could escape from the slow-time envelope surrounding the planet they were built on?
No. The informational illusion didn't cover that.
Ah, the guide does.
Really? Mm.
They weren't on cricket when it was sealed off, but on their warship. And just after the slow-time envelope was locked, they swooped down to steal the key. In the resulting battle, the key, the warship and its robots were blasted into the space-time continuum.
Well, now they're back, as lethal as ever, and they've collected all the pieces of the key, and certain thunder gods I could name didn't lift a hammer to stop them.
But if these robots escaped the slow-time envelope, they represent the technology that the cricket people possessed 10 billion years ago.
Not to mention their paranoid xenophobia.
Exactly! Cut off from the rest of the universe for millennia, can you imagine what weapons of mass destruction the people of cricket have been developing since then, hoping for just this moment?
Oh, crikey, good point. No wonder Slarty Bartfast has been in such a lather.
We have to stop those robots.
Mm.
And Arthur?
Yes?
If you want better luck at parties...
Yes, Tricia?
There's one thing you need.
What?
Laundering.
Hmm.
Come down to the flight deck, Earth people.
Uh-huh.
We have arrived at the asteroid, but the cricket robots have begun the ceremony. I will begin the landing cycle, but all we can do now is watch.
Oh.
And now, back to the music.
On the mile-wide asteroid pursuing a lonely and eternal orbit around an enclosed star system, Arthur Dent, Slarty Bartfast, Ford Prefect, and Trillian find themselves party to an astonishing scene. 11 white robots stand around a white cricket warship, quietly parked amid the stark grey crags.
At the risk of stating the Zarking obvious, if we're too late to stop them, surely we should be getting out of here.
The high ground is a good vantage point from which to watch this historic event.
Shh! It's a good vantage point to be spotted by those homicidal robots and blown to pieces.
They never seem to look this way.
Of course not. I've extended the ship's somebody else's problem field to cover this ridge. All the problems of keeping the starship Bistromath moored to the asteroid, our being able to breathe its meager atmosphere, and indeed remaining undiscovered while standing in plain sight, are, therefore,
somebody else's.
Neat.
However, that does not diminish what is happening here. Here come the last 5 robots carrying the constituent parts of the key.
Assemble the key. Assemble the key. The steel pillar of strength and power. Lower leg of the android. The perspex pillar of science. Argabuthon scepter of justice. The wooden pillar of nature. Recarbonized cricket stump. The gold bale. Heart of the improbability drive. The silver bale. Rory award for the most gratuitous use of the word working in a serious screenplay. The lock reveals itself.
Look up there, overhead. Can you see it?
A huge black patch of nothing with stars around its edge.
The cricket dust cloud. Makes you think, doesn't it?
That at any moment a fleet of battle cruisers will come swarming out of it, wanting to kill everything, everywhere.
It's getting bigger, very quickly.
This asteroid is moving inside it.
Shh! The lock is revealed.
3 long grooves connected at one end by 2 small wiggly grooves.
Oh, of course!
What are they doing? It's too dark to see.
Insert the key.
Don't worry. I think I've guessed.
Insert the key.
Later editions of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy do include sound effects to illustrate its more obscure entries. However, as the editor-in-chief, brackets, sound-Ursa Minor, close brackets, would be the first to admit, some of their efforts, such as that one, might perhaps have benefited by his team going that extra light year. Even the airless trolls of Fidelio 6 would agree that banging a Megadodo Corporation souvenir coffee mug on the editor-in-chief's office minibar scarcely cuts the mustard. It is for this reason that the latest update features the work of the small but dedicated independent company, Philadelia Soundscapers. Their reputation was established not so much with their awe-inspiring repertoire of bangs, bells and whistles, but with their now famous 783,000 bespoke varieties of silence, such as... and... the latter winning several major awards... Indeed, soundscapers argue that there are times when only a medium which bypasses the optic nerve can truly do justice to the ineffability of the galaxy. Take, for example, the unlocking of the wicket gate. Space unpinches itself, and the silence is shattered in a mind-hurting instant as the key slowly turns in the lock. And to recreate this, soundscapers have opted for this stark yet elegant compromise.
Is that all?
The slow time envelope is uncoiled. The solar system of Cricket revealed within the dust cloud.
Ow! What is that light?
It's the Cricket sun. You just happen to be looking in the wrong direction.
Yes, but what's that tiny black speck moving across its disk?
Slightly barred fast. Are you certain there are 11 Cricket robots?
Absolutely.
Then whose are the extra legs coming down the ramp?
Carrying a Kilozap blaster.
Wearing a double-necked Heart of Gold leisure suit.
Zaphod?
Stay cool. The situation is totally under control as of this moment in time.
Intruder. Come in.
Oh! The sock hit my head! Hey, nobody hit this. Ooh.
Destroy the lock. Destroy the lock. End of innings. Return to ship.
Zaphod?
Hey, baby. My heads are banging like a pair of wildebeest on heat.
You all right?
Ford, baby. Weird. That's the second time they could have killed me, but didn't. Maybe they could sense I was a wonderful guy or something, and I can relate to that.
He seems his usual self.
Oh, it's you, Monkey Man.
We must get you aboard the ship. A blow from a Cricket war club is no laughing matter.
Depends whose heads receive it.
Important facts number two. Reproduced from the Sidereal Daily Mentioner's Book of Popular Galactic History. Since this galaxy began, vast civilizations have risen and fallen, risen and fallen, risen and fallen so often that it's quite tempting to think that life in the galaxy must be A, something akin to seasick, space sick, time sick, history sick, or some such, and B, mind-numbingly stupid. However...
Once again, we have failed pathetically, quite pathetically.
You're right, ZB.
Hey, baby.
You're beginning to repeat yourself.
Yeah. I think there's something up with those anodites, dude. Something fundamentally weird.
They are programmed to kill everybody.
That'd do it.
Well, there you go.
See, that's my point. It's because we don't care enough. I told you, they're obsessive and we're not.
Yes, but unless we determine to take action, then we shall all be destroyed. We shall all die. Surely we care about that.
Not enough to get killed over it.
So that's goodbye galaxy, then.
No! No, our course is clear. We must go down to Cricket.
What?
What?
Hey, what?
Beeblebrox, you surely must have some idea why they spared your life and brought you to the asteroid. It seems most unusual.
I kind of think even they didn't know. They just knocked me out, lugged me into their ship, dumped me into a corner, and ignored me like they were embarrassed about me being there. If I said anything, they knocked me out again. We had some great conversations. Hey! Ugh! Hi there! Ugh! Excuse me, guys, can I give you some money? Ugh! Kept me amused for hours, you know?
Here, Zaphod. Catch.
You salvaged the golden bale from the wreckage of the lock?
Hey, the heart of the heart of gold!
Thought you'd want the infinite improbability drive working again.
I don't know how to thank you, Monkey Man.
Don't mention it.
I won't. Gratitude is such an uncool reflex. I never developed it.
I only picked it up because it was lying next to something of value to me.
A handful of black dust.
The remains of the wooden pillar.
Reduced to ashes again, I'm afraid. But a valued keepsake for an Englishman who once loved his cricket.
Hey, old man, I hear this ship can move a bit, so before all this risky stuff starts, how would you like to zip me back to mine?
You will not help us.
I'd love to stay and save the galaxy, but I have the mother and father of a pair of headaches, and I feel the patter of tiny headaches on the way. But next time it needs saving, I'm your guy. Bye.
Unbelievable.
Hey, Trillian baby.
Yes?
You want to come? Heart of gold, excitement, adventure, really wild things, and 49% of the bathroom.
No. I'm going with them.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has listed the Heart of Gold as the fastest ship ever to cross the awe-inspiringly vast interstellar distances involved in meaningful space travel. However, having returned Zaphod Beeblebrox to the Heart of Gold, and leaving him with a sense that his popularity has diminished in direct proportion to his urge for self-preservation, the Starship Bistromath races back to cricket, logging speeds in excess of 10 to the power of 17,000 R on the more open stretches. R in this case is a velocity measure, defined as a reasonable speed of travel that is consistent with health, mental well-being, and not being more than, say, 5 minutes late. It is therefore an almost infinitely variable figure according to circumstances, since the first two factors vary not only with speed taken as an absolute, but also with awareness of the third factor. Unless handled with tranquility, this equation can result in considerable stress, ulcers, and even death. Thus, 10 to the power of 17,000 R is not a fixed velocity, but it is clearly far too fast, which means that Arthur Dent quickly finds himself once more upon the surface of the planet Cricket, with the important difference that this time he and his companions are not experiencing an informational illusion, but reality. This is Cricket itself, and they're standing on it. The strong grass under their feet is real. The heady fragrances from the trees too are real. The night is real night. This is Cricket, the place that could not countenance the existence of any other place, whose charming, delightful, intelligent inhabitants would react with fear, savagery, and pathological hate when confronted with anyone not their own. Possibly the most dangerous place in the galaxy for anyone who isn't a cricketer to stand.
Hey, watch where you're pointing that zap gun.
Sorry.
You'll have my eye out.
Nice of Zaphod to let us have them. And below cost price.
Yeah.
Mad, really. I mean, how can he afford to sell guns below cost?
Oh, he sells a lot of them.
Oh, right.
Shame we couldn't take his Jujanta 200 superchromatic peril-sensitive sunglasses as well.
Peril-sensitive?
Yeah, they're designed to help people develop a relaxed attitude to danger. At the first hint of trouble, they turn totally black and prevent you from seeing anything that might alarm you.
It's a bit late for that, I'm afraid. Remember the informational illusion?
Mm.
How black the night sky of cricket was?
Mm.
Well, look at it now.
Mm. Hundreds of spaceships and big grey buildings just hanging out there.
War zones and robot zones floating in nilo-grav fields. The planet Cricket has retained its pleasant green pastoral character, but the space around it reflects a sustained bout of aggressive military spending.
Trillian?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
Thinking.
Do you always breathe like that when you're thinking?
I wasn't aware that I was breathing.
That's what worried me.
I think I know.
Shh! They're coming!
Nobody's singing songs this time.
This time they've seen us!
Trillian, your safety catch is on, by the way. Trillian? What's up there?
Has it occurred to anyone?
Hello?
Excuse me? Are you aliens?
What needs to be of service?
Oh, computer!
Thank you.
Hi there! Eddie at your service, ungagged and with fully functioning improbability drive.
Whatever. Open the all frequencies emergency channel.
Oh, that's for emergencies only. Are you sure you're experiencing an emergency?
This is an emergency, screen face. Now open the channel.
Okay, just doing my job, buddy.
Emergency dispatch.
This is Zaphod Beeblebrox. You like a drink, right?
This is an emergency, fella.
The worst kind. I'm fresh out of olives.
Dad, go take a ride on a comet.
Sheesh. Computer.
Hi there.
What was my last score on Grand Theft Cosmo?
You scored 3 points, big guy. Championship score to beat is 7,597,220.
Yeah, okay. Feed my score and that other one into the guidance system. Then hit maximum acceleration.
Consider it hit. Want to fasten your safety straps?
Nah, thrill me.
You got it.
Tell us, alien brother, do you know anything about something called the,
balance of nature?
Yeah.
Why?
It's just something we heard about. Probably nothing important. Oh, well, I suppose we'd better kill you then.
That is, unless there's anything you want to chat about?
We're worried, you see, about this plan of universal destruction.
Vis-a-vis the,
balance of nature.
Yeah. Only it seems to us that if the whole of the rest of the universe is destroyed, it will somehow upset the
balance of
things. We're quite keen on ecology, you see.
And sport.
Mostly sport. Some of us are quite keen to have sporting links with the rest of the galaxy. And though I can see the argument about keeping sport out of politics, if we want to have sporting links with the rest of the galaxy, then it's probably a mistake to destroy it. And indeed the rest of the universe.
Right.
Which is what seems to be the idea now.
Interesting idea. Let's you and me talk about it.
Really?
Tell me.
We have to be alone, I think.
Come on, then. Excuse us, everybody.
See ya.
Trillion. Don't be too long about it.
Then can we kill them?
Okay. Now you can tell me.
Yeah, right. Well, we have this bomb, you see. It's just a little bomb.
I know.
You do?
Yes.
Honestly, it's a very, very little bomb.
I know.
But they say it can destroy everything that exists. And we have to do that, you see, I think. Will we be alone? I mean, we don't know. It seems to be our function, though.
Whatever that means.
Hey. It's all right. You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it.
Really?
Oh, don't suck your thumb. Listen, I want you to do something for me. Oh, sorry. I just realized what I was going to say. I was actually going to say, take me to your leader. Me, to your leader, up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very good.
How did you know the leaders are up there?
Full of hidden shallows, that girl. Arthur, what are you peering at?
I could well be losing my mind, but don't you think that tiny pinprick of a spaceship up there looks remarkably like the heart of gold?
Beeblebrox's ship has just entered the atmosphere. The robot war zones, to be precise.
What's he doing up there?
Let's hope it's something quick. I don't like the way these people are smiling at us.
With nerve.
nerves of titanium-tipped titanium. Seyfarth Beeblebrox crosses the narrow steel gangway over a 20,000-foot drop, like the hell of a guy he is, reasoning that he might as well live up to his reputation as pee all over it.
Caution. Enter security access code. System accessed.
Look out, cricket robots. I've got a zap gum, a pair of hangovers, and two bad consciences.
Battlecruiser Strider X. Culture section. Please do not touch the exhibit.
I'm guessing the heaviest battlecruiser is where the action is. Wow. That is one wrecked spacecraft.
Welcome, friends, to Battlecruiser Strider X, our most lethal vessel.
Yeah, right.
And home of a historical artifact which inspired us, the people of Cricket, to leap from our battered surly bombs to discover the horror beyond the great cloud.
Yeah, yeah. This is the ship that started the whole business off, right? Wrong. Very wrong. Ugh. Some Zeeb might think this was real starship wreckage if they'd never seen any before. This is like some half-finished self-build. Cut away to give those bozos a blueprint to copy. But who would want to unleash them on the galaxy? What would be in it for them? Why are my heads asking each other rhetorical questions? Oh, were they rhetorical? Uh-oh. Time to get scarce in a hurry. Maintenance duct. Perfect.
Well, sir, I think...
Well, what?
Well, sir, I think that maybe now is the right time that we should perhaps consider phasing them out of the war effort now that we have the supernova bomb.
What are you talking about?
Well, in the very short time since we were released from the envelope...
Get to the point, soldier.
The robots, sir, the robots aren't enjoying it, sir.
Enjoying what?
The war, sir. They're not enjoying the war. It seems to be getting them down.
Getting them down?
Yeah, there's a certain world weariness about them, or perhaps I should say universe weariness about them, sir.
If there's anything worse than a commander who gossips, it's two commanders who gossip.
They lack spunk.
Lack what?
Oomph, sir. Oomph.
Oomph?
Oomph, yeah, oomph. They lack spunk, they lack oomph, they lack...
What in the name of cricket are you talking about?
Well, in the very few skirmishes they've had recently, it seems that they go in a battle, they raise their weapons to fire, and suddenly think, why bother?
I see.
And they...
Holy Belgium, how much longer?
And then, what do they do?
Quadratic equations, mainly, sir. Fiendishly difficult ones, by all accounts, sir, but,
Whoever heard of a robot
sucking? Yes, sir. What?
Thank you for visiting.
Thanks, Sark, for that. Hey. What?
Darkness won't engulf my head.
Marvin?
I can see by infrared how I hate the night.
What does Marvin's reappearance forebode in these and subsequent troubled times? How will Trillian convince the elders of Cricket to grow up? And will Arthur Dent find time to get his dressing gown laundered? The loose ends await tying up in the final part of this tertiary phase of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, William Franklin was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect, Mark Wing-Davey, Seyfarth Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Stephen Moore, Marvin, Dominic Hawksley, the Cricket Commander, and Richard Griffiths was Slarty Bartfast. Roger Gregg played Eddie, Bob Golding, the Dispatcher, and Mike Fenton Stevens and Philip Pope were most of the population of Cricket. The announcer was John Marsh. The surround mix was by Paul Dealey, and the live FX by Ken Humphrey. The script editor was John Langdon, and the music was by Paul Wicks Wickens. The production assistants were Laura Harris and Joe Wheeler. The programme was adapted, directed and co-produced by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Helen Chatwell and Bruce Hyman, and it was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4. This week's programme was brought to you by the letters F, gamma, and the hexadecimal number 3 cosine D bracket to the power of 8. 9. No, 8. Actually, can I get back to you? Meanwhile, here's some music.